Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, your source for what we like to call a conversation radio that's a little compromised right now, but that's okay. We'll get through. The Horn is easily available by going, of course, to headonradionetwork.com. and clicking Listen Live, but you may also wish to access it via any of a number of portable platforms, apps, if you will, things like the TuneIn Radio app, the Stitcher app, both of which are available for your Android or iPhone device. There are other platforms, of course, Dar.fm, Streama.com. The Horn is available on Roku devices. The podcasting address for the program is at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And we do begin a week of broadcasting that, like I said, is going to be a little bit compromised. Agnes put up a no-show post earlier today based on the fact that we were not able to, well, let's put it this way. You know the computer problems we had last week? They just got worse by a factor of 3. At present, in the studio, in West Virginia, at the mansion, the fabulous Horn Mansion, there is not a single working computer in the studio. I can't wait to get home. I am, of course, being sarcastic. But no, I have no idea. I spent, you know what went down last week. And then I spent the weekend, well, mostly Friday and Saturday, trying to get a couple of workarounds going. And then found out today while I was in a meeting over on the House side of the Congress. When I got out, I found out that the streaming computer had died, and that apparently the production computer is also dead. I don't know why, and it is deeply troubling, any way you slice it, but there's not much I can do from here except to fire up the system that I have and hopefully get a program out. That, at least, is the goal. And that is what we will attempt to do. Now, what does that mean for the, like I said, the concept of conversation radio is somewhat compromised. What that means is that we will have conversation, but it will be limited to your ability to access Skype and make your calls that way. You know, of course, how to reach me on Skype after all this time. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, is the horn, well, it's the handle on Skype. And if you've never friended up or done a contact request before and you want to reach the program, this would be a lovely time to do that, do exactly that. Just send me a friend request or contact request or whatever they're calling it over there, and I will answer it forthwith. As I just did with one from Jeremy from Vermont. And we'll get you on the show that way. Of course, I can't have a bunch of people on hold at the same time. But we'll make it work. We'll make it work. Need to check a couple of things as we go here. Things that are hard to check without. That's why I appreciate everything that Sparky does in the chat room. He's excellent about shooting some, sending back feedback on how things are working or not working. Yeah, okay, thanks, Jeremy. Volume very low. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Okay, stand by. Thanks for letting me know. Thanks, Sparky. Maybe that'll make things a little better, or maybe not. Someday. Let's see. Are we getting any? Is anything getting any better? Actually, trying a different mic this time around simply because of all the previous problems we had with getting sufficient gain. Hopefully this is a little bit better. But no, it is, okay, let's take care of this part of the process as well. Many thanks to Darlene Friday for putting up a challenge that took us from being $500 in the hole to being $300 in the hole. Of course, now it's Monday, and so we're at roughly $450 in the hole. However, there is good news. And the good news is this. I received word of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge to begin the week. So Shirley has put forward $100. Hopefully that will be matched. 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 20 at 5, 2 at 50, $33.33, 75 to 25, 60 to 40, 40. However, but that's what keeps us on the air. That's what keeps all this going. Okay. Texas Betsy, I have no idea what stream went sideways on TuneIn means, but Texas Betsy says she has it from the web. Good. Okay, thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate the input. Now, where do we go? Well, of course, there is the brief reminder that the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, or if you wish to participate in keeping this on the air by old-fashioned, carbon-intensive postal mail, that works too. And that address is 1038 The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay, wonderful. Thanks. Everything's working on TuneIn now. Great. This is like launching a spaceship. Okay, thanks, Randy. Thanks, Jack. It is Moran Monday on the horn. And that, of course, means, well, it means that we're going to, well, that's another thing I'm missing. I don't have the More and Monday music with me. Damn it. But we can do that without all the Sturm und Drang or the hurry, 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 step right up. It's the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much. Okay. Moran Monday on the horn. And if I sound a little flustered, I am. There is nothing quite so frustrating as knowing that there's something wrong and not being able to do anything about it. And poor Agnes is beside herself, wondering what went wrong back in the studio. So that's kind of where my head's been. Now, it is Moran Monday, though. And I think it's fairly obvious that we... And you know how I feel about talking about what everybody else has been talking about all day. But it's kind of hard to avoid talking about the finally, long overdue shuffling off the mortal coil of Maggie Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher. For indeed, she did die today. The British government announced, and her family announced. And there has been an embarrassing parade of people praising Caesar instead of burying her. I'm on the burial side of this camp. Now, let's see here. I've got a couple of examples that have just come in from, because you know about all the right-wing dreck that lands in my inbox on any given day. Let me go down here and find them. Here's Americans for Prosperity, you know, the teabagger organization. AFP President Tim Phillips said, "Today, with heavy hearts, we mark the passing of Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, a stalwart ally of the free market and a powerful defender of liberty." Hooty hoot, Sergeant Carter. "She led her nation with grace and iron will and principled values that led to economic prosperity and a stronger nation for all her people." Her people. "Although her presence will be deeply missed, the ideas she stood for live on stronger than ever in the hearts and minds of free market champions worldwide." That led to economic prosperity and a stronger nation for all her people. You know, I don't think you would get that verdict anywhere near uniformly from citizens of the UK, subjects of the UK, were they polled one by one. We note the passing of Margaret Thatcher because Margaret Thatcher was a lot of what was wrong with the 1980s. Her little dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, ginned up little war against the Falkland Islands. Yeah, that'll get her at least one turn on the rotisserie in hell. Maybe she and her buddy Ronnie Raygun are just twisting their side. "Well, Maggie, I've been waiting for you for a while. I'm nice and crispy now, but that's okay. They give me fresh skin every so often and start the barbecue all over again. My goodness gracious, the price we pay for having brought freedom to all of those dead people." Right? Marty, writing in. Yep, Thatcher's gone, like I said earlier, to that special level of hell. Need I repeat who it's reserved for? No, no. No, Marty, we remember. We remember. Well, thank you very much, Michael. Taking a big bite out of our deficit and just outright meeting Shirley's Wisconsin challenge. Thank you very, very much. That takes a little bit of the stress off the evening. It certainly does. Yeah, Sandra reminding me that a second woman passed today as well. And it's true, Annette Funicello. And I got a note from Ron in Raleigh prior to showtime about this very fact. He said, today, two women passed away. The passing of one brought a tear to my eye because it reminded me of my bygone youth and the pleasure she brought. Annette Funicello was a part of my childhood, from the Mickey Mouse Club I watched after school to the beach blanket bingo movies. She was always a lady, not a whiff of scandal ever attached. The other woman that passed away caused me to sing a chorus of Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, which does seem to be the general consensus of a lot of people around this planet, that the only way Margaret Thatcher's passing could have been better would be if someone had dropped a house on her. Anyway, Ron in Raleigh says, the other woman that passed caused me to sing a chorus of Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. The passing of Margaret Thatcher has caused the world media, and this is true, to go into full canonize the evil dead mode. And that woman was evil, wasn't she? How many lives did she ruin in her assault on the miners' union, the NUM? Yeah. Ron in Raleigh continues, this is the woman that gave the murderous Augusto Pinochet asylum and declared him a great leader. She was a towering figure in world politics, according to the world press. I suggest someone in the press ask the poor and lower classes in Great Britain what they thought of her leadership and policies. Well, apparently someone has. Because there are, as I understand it, even as we speak, parties underway celebrating Margaret Thatcher's having begun her journey to eternal torment in hell, if it was real. They've lowered all the flags to half-mast in Great Britain. And over in the financial district of London, they're wringing their hands and talk about it. It's a shame. It's a crying shame. She's a good woman. It's a sad day. The greatest British leader and a true lady. You make Britain what it is. This awful woman held office for 11 years. And at least one individual, according to the story I'm reading, David Hopper, who was regional secretary of the National Union of Mine Workers in Northeast England, told Agence France-Presse, I'm having a drink to it right now. It's a marvelous day. I'm absolutely delighted. It's my 70th birthday today, and it's one of the best I've had in my life. And then the Socialist Worker Weekly newspaper said, we'll be glad to see the back of her. She ruined the lives of tens of millions of working-class people in Britain, which she did. It's just the truth. Mikhail Gorbachev has come out and said, well, she certainly did help break Soviet Union and cause collapse of Soviet state. Okay. But the fact of the matter remains that she was a warmonger. She was bloodthirsty. She absolutely danced in delight over the Falklands debacle. Yeah, she did. She ruled until John Majors ran her ass off, says Sandra. Never mind the little sound effect in the background. For some reason, the office phone here at Ake HQ plays "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" when it rings. I do wish it would stop. But probably most of all, it was the fact that she... Oh, what was the phrase that Godzilla from Wasilla used back in 2008? And she palled around with fascists. She absolutely thought the world of Augusto Pinochet. Murderous thug that he was. But probably the most delightful, because, right, the right wing is very good at hissy. They do hissy almost, well, they do it professionally. And following the news of the blessed demise of Margaret Thatcher, the right wing hissy was on. Because in noting her death, CNN ran two photos, and they ran them several times. And the two photos, one was of the Iron Lady. Yeah, we throw lady around pretty broadly, I guess. The standing, well, with Augusto Pinochet. Reminding people that, yes, she did have rather a nasty little case of fascism envy. Of course, she's not the first government official in the UK to suffer from that. The other thing that got them going, and it especially got Michelle Malkin in knots, and that's always a good thing, was that they showed her with a photo of Jimmy Savile. Is that his name? Is that the pronunciation? S-A-V-I-L-E? Jimmy Savile? Who was some sort of television personality in the UK? It was from an event in the 1980s to support the NSPCC Children's Charity. CNN showed the photo at least four times, according to the Raw Story report I'm looking at. Jimmy Savile died around 2011, and shortly thereafter, Scotland Yard announced that it had begun an investigation into a whole bunch of allegations that this individual, this Jimmy Savile, had sexually abused hundreds of children. And of course, there was the picture of Margaret Thatcher standing next to this individual. Michelle Malkin, the anchor baby. She is. It's okay. Because that's a word she uses to describe other human beings. Sauce, goose, sauce, gander, right? She said, "That is the picture CNN chose to run for Margaret Thatcher's obituary, a pedophile?" Whoever's doing the Thatcher montage on CNN is either an idiot or a sly lefty. Repeated images of Thatcher with Pinochet and Savile. Or maybe that was David Tumulty, whoever that is. But yes, the right wing got quite upset, I'm afraid. That was my poor and cheesy James Mason. Yes, Jeremy Hill has a little less room now with the death of Margaret Thatcher. But But of all the Margaret Thatcher dead stories, this one is the best. When Margaret Thatcher screwed, well, no, she just, okay, she did the screwing back in the 80s. When Margaret Thatcher shuffled off this mortal coil, when Margaret Thatcher began pining for the fjords, Sandra says, ha ha, on that phone ringtone. It kind of fits in with the craziness. I suppose it does. In ever so many ways. But when, you know, after she went, oh, Sandra's batting a million. I'm sure Joan Armatrading is upset about Thatcher. She's a big fan. Oh, it's too early to drink. But no, when she shuffled off the mortal coil, when she began pining for the fjords, when she became an expat, some of the people who were of a more liberal bent, a more progressive bent, began celebrating her demise. And I guess it's a little tacky to celebrate somebody dying, because we all get to do it at one time or another. No matter what we do on Earth, it's the one thing every human being shares in common and gets to do. And so celebrating it may be a little bit tacky, but I tell you what, when somebody's as hateful and vile and nasty and filthy as Margaret Thatcher was, it's almost impossible to resist. Be that as it may, some people began celebrating her death, and I guess the parties are ongoing in Great Britain right now. But some people began celebrating her death and created a hashtag on Twitter. And the hashtag was, now Thatcher's dead. You know, things like, the sun will shine a little warmer on my face, hashtag now Thatcher's dead. The people of Chile can feel a little better about justice, hashtag now Thatcher's dead. So it proliferated a little bit, I guess. But that's the problem, not so much with the spoken language, but that's the problem with the written language. Because some people saw, and I realize I'm engaging in a little bit of dirty pool from the Fox style book by saying some people, but that's the best I've got right now. Some people were highly upset with that hashtag, not because Thatcher's dead, but because they looked at that hashtag and thought for a little bit that it said, now that Cher's dead. Cher's dead? What? Of course, we all know that Cher will never die as long as that painting remains locked up inside the closet underneath her stairwell, or she's brought the blood of young children, or whatever it is that makes her stay forever young. But yeah, now that Cher's dead. And no small number of people. But has anybody seen her? Now that Cher's dead. Because, you know, that's the hashtag for Jesus. Sometimes as a species, I just have my doubts. But that's a starting place for this Moran Monday. And we can run right out of the gates in a number of directions, really. Let's try this one on. Because this is sad. Hell, it's horrible. And we're not going to laugh about it. It's nothing to laugh about. There's nothing quite like a barbecue once spring has arrived. And spring has sprung in Wilson County, Tennessee. And so, with spring having sprung, folks were gathering at a home. They were barbecuing, which has various and sundry different meanings, but a lot of times it means just cooking some hamburgers and some weenies out on the grill. And the barbecue the party was at Deputy Daniel Fanning's residence. Had a bunch of folks over, probably having some beers. And at one point in time, Deputy Fanning went into a bedroom with another relative, and they was looking at guns. You probably know how this works out. You probably know how this ends. And at some point in time, a loaded firearm was left on top of the bed. A 3-year-old child picked up the firearm and blew away 48-year-old Josephine Fanning, the spouse of gun owner Deputy Daniel Fanning. Single shot. Of course, we all remember what the NRA says. The only thing that'll stop a bad toddler with a gun is a good toddler with a gun. The heartbreak that attends a story like this, I think even the most empathic among us are challenged. It's incomprehensible. The human mind recoils at even considering this as some manifestation of reality. But of course, it is a manifestation of reality. And it's kind of an everyday manifestation of reality. Now, Tennessee is protecting rights and gun rights. Now, women's, they ain't got so many rights because, you know, fetuses and babies. Women, not so much. Not a great place to be a prisoner, either. Certainly not a very good place to be of Hispanic or Latino descent. Not a very good place to be black folks. Not a very good place to be poor white. It is, in short, a Confederate state. And they don't have much. They don't have much in the way of gun laws. And it turns out that according to a Center for American Progress study that came out this past week, the weaker the gun laws in a given state, the more likely it is that a law enforcement officer will be killed in that state. According to the study, Louisiana is drop dead last, no pun intended, in terms of weakness of gun laws. Louisiana is second worst in the nation behind South Dakota when it comes to law enforcement officers feloniously killed by firearms in the line of duty. It's quite a list. The highest rates of law enforcement, gun violence outcomes Missouri, Arkansas, Arizona, New Mexico, Alaska, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina stand in no particular order. Tennessee is in the next group, the 11 to 20 group. Then again, so is West Virginia, and so is Indiana. Give you an idea. That's okay. The Republican Party says it's okay. The Republican Party is more than happy to have a few dead cops, or maybe the wife, the spouse of a cop, blown away by a three-year-old because, well, I saw a video the other day that said, watch this three-year-old use Windows 8. I was a little humiliated because I don't use Windows 8 so good. But far more important than watching a three-year-old use Windows 8, watch the three-year-old use the firearm. Because, after all, the NRA knows that the sooner you... the sooner you get them into the gun culture, the more likely it is you are to keep them. So what do you... Now, this is a real question. Email answers are fine. Calls to Skype work, too. But this is a real question. How do you go about raising the three-year-old? Because I don't know. Do you hope that the three-year-old simply grows up, doesn't remember blowing away Auntie Josephine, and everybody promises never to mention it to her? Or at three, is memory well enough developed that the day you pulled the trigger and Auntie Josephine got all dead remains forever in your mind? I don't know the answer, and I'm not trying by any stretch of the imagination to interpose any guilt. I mean, we have certain attitudes about children, and once upon a time it was referred to as the law of sevens. From age 0 to 7, a child is incapable of intentional anything in the eyes of the law. 7 to 14, it's a coin toss. And 14 to 21, you are presumed to intend the rational consequences of your act. Texas Betsy pointing out, memory is well developed in the average three-year-old, but permanence is not. Three-year-olds do not understand that people stay dead. What a brutal way to find out. But again, please, understand this story as a story of freedom. It's a story about protecting our democracy. And I know that sounds a little bit smart-assy, and I guess I'll just have to live with that. But if you look at the behavior of several members of the United States Senate, some of whom even baffle cranky old John McCain, who swear that they'll filibuster any gun bill that comes along because, you know, freedom. Well, they've already made their minds up. They've made their minds up that three-year-olds blowing away 48-year-old Auntie Josephine is just the price that society is willing to pay in order to protect our freedoms and be able to carry our shooting iron next to us on our hip in our holster, just like Sheriff Matt Dillon when we go down for a loaf of Wonder Bread and a jar of Skippy. That's America. That's reality. But Lord, 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 I would not even want to begin to think about being one of the adults who tries to deal with that little one's future. Would you? Marty just checked. He said 11 years old is the youngest anyone's been tried as an adult. Well, I don't think we have to worry about that. No, if anything, the right wing will say, well, see, you're going to use this to politicize the gun debate again now, ain't you? I reckon so. Now, this was a law officer. This was somebody who dealt with firearms every day of his existence. And even he screwed up and just left the firearm laying around, and the toddler picked it up. And, well, now they're planning, instead of another picnic like they had this past weekend, they're planning Auntie Josephine's funeral. And that is a horrible thing to have injected into one's life. 3 years old. Because, well, the weenies was good, the burgers is good. Hey, I know what. Let me show you this new semiotic automatic pistol I got here. Oh, you're gonna love this. Come on up. Come on, Eustace. Come on up to the bedroom. That's where I keep my shooting guns. Come on up to the bedroom. I'll show you my new pistol. How we wish that was a euphemism, huh? Yeah. Like I said, Moran Monday, busy one. Then there's this. And this is just weird. And this is a West Virginia story because he's a West Virginia feller. And it's one of those where you put your little head and your little hand and you kind of shake it back and forth because nothing's making sense. Apparently, Brad Paisley, who is one hell of a guitar player, but apparently not one of your deeper thinkers, he's all worried about how he can display his Southern pride. Now, last I checked, I thought Brad Paisley was from up around somewhere around Wheeling, and that ain't even Southern. That's north of the Mason-Dixie line. But he's got a song out called "Accidental Racist." And he said, I just think art has a responsibility to lead the way, and I don't know the answers, but I feel like asking the question is the first step, and we're asking the question in a big way. How do I show my Southern pride? What is offensive to you? And, Jesus Christ. He even roped LL Cool J into doing this thing with him. to show that bygones is bygones. And it, oh, well, hang on here. Let's just, I'm not going to play the song, but let's see what the lyrics say. Okay, here we go. Now we need to, now remember, art is leading the way here according to Brad Paisley, because this here's art. To the man that waited on me at the Starbucks down on Main, I hope you understand, when I put on that t-shirt, the only thing I meant to say is, I'm a Skynyrd fan. The red flag on my chest somehow is like the elephant in the corner of the South. And I just walked him right into the room, just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms, looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to understand what it's like not to be. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. See what he did there? Rhymed B and history. Mm-hmm. Our generation didn't start this nation. We're still picking up the pieces, walking on eggshells, fighting over yesterday and caught between Southern pride and Southern blame. Bullshit. What a fraud. Walking on. Now here's a guy. He's a millionaire. He's a millionaire. But he feels aggrieved because he can't wear his Confederate battle flag t-shirt and not get a few looks here and there. Looks that he damned well ought to get. But he's the one who is, of course, walking on eggshells. You know what? There was a time in this country, and it ain't entirely gone, when somebody shows up with that flag, there's a lot of other people walking on eggshells. Never know what'll happen if you piss the Confederate battle flag people off. Okay, here's a history lesson. They called it Reconstruction, fixed the buildings, dried some tears. We're still sifting through the rubble after 150 years. I try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. But it ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. So, you know, you'll just have to understand poor Brad. Because, I mean, he'll walk a mile in your shoes, but he don't want to be no black folks. He's mighty happy he's born white. Because I'm a white man living in the Southland. Just like you, I'm more than what you see. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. And this thing's a real magnum opus, too. Yeah, poor, poor, pitiful. Apparently not a lot of people are buying on this. Let's see, a website called The Hairpin said it was a lyrical disgrace filled with awkward non-apologies and faux pensiveness over the history of racism in the South. HuffPo said it was cringeworthy. Salon said it was bizarre. Gawker said, Brad, I don't think you're the one paying for the mistake of buying and selling human beings, really. And no, I will not. I absolutely will not. No, I won't play it. You can't make me. So there. But I do love it when these little moments bubble to the surface. in which somebody clothed in God knows 92 dozen layers of white privilege begins pissing and moaning because he just wants to have his symbols of racism, damn it, and he'll define what it means, not you. Marty pointing out, at least Paisley tried to think on it. Imagine some no-talent hack like Toby Keith with a song like this. We may not have to. I'm sure he'll come up with one. So more in Monday? Yeah, more in Monday. We will take a little break. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. And... well, Skype is method of the hour for engaging in conversation radio here. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach me, how you reach the program, how you reach the Horn family. And if you wish to participate that way, go right ahead. A little earlier today, Sandra sent in the perfect song for dealing with the passing of that blood-soaked freak, Margaret Thatcher. And I think we're gonna put it to use. Just a matter of finding it. And there it is. Comes from Morrissey. So light up the Skype if you want to. Be back in a few. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Okay, so suddenly that aspect of the program isn't working. We'll just take a little break and be right back. Well, I do hate to let a good bumper go to waste, and I kind of miss my show intros, too, but, well, these things happen, I suppose. But this is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We're back at it again for the, we're a commune, Texas Betsy. We're Horn family. Pick one. This is the second hour of the program. It's 2 minutes past 7 o'clock here on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. We are broadcasting live from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, and it's More In Monday, and we've got an email in from Dr. John. And Dr. John is so much better at this than I. Subject line, I call bullshit on accidental racist by Brad Paisley. This is the worst sort of example of deflected politics. The idea that when someone does something provocative to inspire a reaction, it's the offended party that's politicizing the issue. Same sort of story with the NRA. Politicizing firearms is their business, but after a shooting, it's only those who object that are being too political. Also, proud rebel son, as in a traitor to the Republic? Well, yeah, there's that. Also, blaming the North for insufficient reconstruction? History correction. The South underdeveloped itself through reliance on slavery. Enslaved labor meant that there was zero social mobility for poor whites, leading to generations of poverty, while the 1% slaveholders kept a stranglehold on internal developments, ensuring that only those internal improvements that benefited them directly were funded. So the South had railroads to nowhere, bare minimum public education, scattered and uncoordinated industry. Basically, anything approximating intelligent infrastructure was a non-starter in the old Confederacy. So no, Mr. Paisley, the proud rebels have nobody but their states' rights forebears to blame for the ruin of the war and the ineffective cleanup thereafter. Bingo, spot on. Thank you, Dr. John. That said everything I intended to say and said it intelligently. Whereas I look at something like the Brad Paisley Accidental Racist song and I just want to make little strangled animal noises. But Moran Monday it is. And when you think Moran, isn't it hard not to think Sean Hannity? Because he is one. I'm sure by now that you are well aware of the outrage that was generated over the behavior of the head basketball coach at Rutgers University, the University of New Jersey. The guy had a propensity for throwing basketballs at his players, for vilifying them with various and sundry epithets, including, and you know, this is one of those moments where I'm kind of glad I'm on the internet because I can say things that can't be said on censored radio. So that in the rest of the for-profit media, they had to say that he used, they'd play the audio of him screaming at his players and then they'd bleep it out. Well, no. This guy called his players fucking faggots and fucking fairies in an attempt to get them to play basketball better than they were before he called them that. And just about everybody who heard that story, who became aware of what happened after he was finally fired, the director of player development alleges that he was actually fired from his job for reporting what this guy was doing to his players to the administration. So that has yet to be sorted out. But when he was fired, most decent human beings said, that seems appropriate. But not Radio Rwanda. Oh, no. No, not Fox. There are a couple of losers over at Fox who tried to defend the Rutgers head coach. Namely, Sean Hannity and Eric Bolling. Mike Rice was there, the coach at Rutgers was there for all to see, screaming those things at his players. It was caught on video. He only got fired after ESPN aired the videotape with the bleeps. Well, Eric Bolling said that the firing of Mike Rice by Rutgers University was part of, and this is a quote, the wussification of America. Because, see, if this is an America where an upstanding, God-fearing, red-blooded American male can't call some other God-fearing, upstanding, red-blooded American male a fucking faggot and a fucking sissy, well, this ain't America anymore. This is just a wussified country. Right? So, after Eric Bolling declares the wussification of America, enter Sean Hannity, life support system for a haircut, who declares he's trying to bring the best out of them, put discipline in that team, raise their game, force them to focus, push them to become champions, and that takes intensity. because nothing says competitive intensity like calling a 19-year-old African-American male a fucking faggot. Or a fucking fairy. Take your pick. It wasn't the only time he did it. It wasn't a one-off. It was his style. That's how he brought out the best of them. But then came this from Sean Hannity. And this really is the cherry on top of the pile of poop. Having declared that he was trying to bring out the best in his players, Sean Hannity then declared, "My father hit me with a belt. I turned out okay." Really, Sean? Did you? Because I got a feeling there's a lot of mental health professionals in the United States of America who would say that you probably didn't. That there's probably enough counseling time in you, enough need for counseling time to put a psychiatrist's family of seven all through dental school paying cash. Well, my dad hit me with a belt. And you can almost hear it, can't you? Do you wonder, when that's the first place that somebody like Sean Hannity goes, do you wonder if maybe something got triggered? We understand trigger words here. We understand how profound and how hurtful they can be. But do you think that maybe in that moment, Sean Hannity could feel the hot sting of that belt all over again, and could feel old Papa Hannity calling him a fucking faggot and a fucking fairy? Because see, there is a reality that underlies all of this, and that is that violence begets violence. There's a reason that the Bible says that those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, himself says that, right as he's getting taken away by the Romans. Put up thy sword, for those that live by the sword shall die by the sword. And violence begets violence, and bullies beget bullies, and child abusers beget child abusers, until someone steps in and breaks the cycle of violence. Until someone makes a determination, and usually has to have some rather significant help along the way, that they will not let it go another generation. Sean Hannity has children, no? Do you think that a statement like, "My daddy hit me with the belt and I turned out okay," would be enough to occasion maybe a little visit from Child Protective Services to talk to the Hannity children? Exactly, Will in Chicago, noting abuse victims do often, too often, become abusers. Yeah. And see, that's another component of the utter screwed upness of our culture. We equate money and the acquisition of wealth with so many things that we let it be an excuse for things that we would not tolerate out of the less wealthy. Sean Hannity thinks that because he is a millionaire, being paid to spew hate for about 4 hours a day into a microphone or at a camera, that somehow means that he is no longer a beaten child. that he, that the moments when his father swung that belt at him have somehow been ameliorated by his acquisition and amassing of great wealth. Well, the fact of the matter is, it hasn't. You know, this is not that scene from Casablanca where Sam walks around with the bottles of champagne as the Nazis are marching into Germany and says, drinking this champagne sure going to take the sting out of getting occupied. This is not that. And for all his millions, this is the kind of stuff that only gets learned in certain very delicate or sensitive or fragile situations. Do you remember the story of the Texas judge who finally got caught on video beating the snot out of his teenage daughter because she downloaded a video game? That man's back on the bench judging other human beings now, by the way, if I understand the story correctly. The moments in which we develop and have a clarity of understanding for what it means when Daddy gets the belt out. Sometimes those things don't happen until we are in extremis. And for all we know, before Sean Hannity closes his eyes for the last time, Daddy, with the belt out, will be waiting for him. And all the money and all the millions in the world will not be able to save him. But meanwhile, in that moment in which he declared, my father took a belt to me and I turned out okay, Sean Hannity became not just a social commenter, and a bad one at that. In that moment, he became an enabler. Because within the millions who do listen to him, there was, and I guarantee it, because it's not like he's talking to enlightened, progressive people. He's talking to people who are inclined toward authoritarianism anyway. In that moment, Sean Hannity became an enabler of some individual who is not insane, who is not out of his mind. Sean Hannity became an enabler of some human being who tonight or tomorrow night or a week or a month will take the belt or the fly swatter or the cord to the iron to some little one, and they will justify it to themselves by saying, my daddy hit me with the belt and I turned out okay, and Sean Hannity's daddy hit him with the belt and he turned out okay, I'll hit mine with the belt and he or she will turn out okay. All this talk has consequences. But if we were to find out that some child had been beaten within an inch of his or her life or to death, by a Sean Hannity viewer or listener. Sean Hannity's natural first words out of his mouth would be, "I'm only an entertainer." That person had to be crazy. Then, of course, that person would be tried by a jury of his or her peers, found to be quite sane, and punished accordingly within the prison system. And I guess maybe it turns out he's right. His daddy took a belt to him, he's got his millions, and he's okay. But somewhere out in America, out in the United States, some child somewhere ain't okay and ain't gonna have no millions. Just a parent who said Sean Hannity got the belt. And if it was good enough for Sean Hannity, a little taste won't hurt you either, pumpkin. Betsy pointing out, Sean Hannity could be a Texas school child, huh? The rest of the civilized world is way past this. Yeah, but what is it, 19 states in these United States still allow teachers to beat a child? You know, beat some sense into them, beat some arithmetic into them, beat some spelling into them. Because you know how it is with children. Some of them can only hear through their buttocks. Yeah. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Hey, Bob. I went to Catholic school at a time when teachers stood behind you, looking over your shoulder as you worked, and would whack you in the back of the head every time you made a mistake. I went to Catholic school at a time when teachers would line up every boy in the class who couldn't remember a math formula and strap or cane them. And on and on. It didn't make me smarter, but it certainly killed off my interest in learning for many years. Fortunately, I loved and still do reading. Signed, Robert. P.S. And I call complete and utter BS on I was hit as a child and I turned out okay. How do they know that? Well, I think saying something like that is pretty much proof positive that you didn't, if you've got to justify it. This from Dr. John. Just had my first sip of bourbon since Thatcher's death. I fear it'll never taste quite this sweet again. Is this how drinking problems get started? Oh, I'll have to wait. You know, I make a promise to myself and to you all that we won't do any Limbaugh radio here, altered in any way. I'll wait till after showtime, and hopefully, then I'll toast her first spin on the spit in hell. Yes, indeedy. And since we talked about Sean Hannity as quality father, let's take a moment for Loretta Gandy of Sissonville. Isaac sent this along. Loretta Gandy of Sissonville has since declared at the funeral of her son Shane that she knows her boy is now in heaven. Shane Gandy, of course, one of the stars of the MTV so-called unreality show, Buckwild, that celebrated the sort of dualist existence of some early 20-something West Virginia kids. It was 3 o'clock in the morning in a bar when he declared that he and his uncle and another buddy were going to go out mudding, and promptly got themselves sunk up to the hubs and covered up their exhaust pipe and filled it up with mud and died of carbon monoxide poisoning. They held his funeral. They held his funeral at the Charleston Municipal Auditorium. It was packed. It's a pathetic story. His mama said, I know where Shane is. He said about a month ago, I know when I die, I'm going to heaven. And then the Reverend Randy Campbell took over. The Yahoo story says he told the many young people in the crowd he understands that life bombards them with difficult choices, but he urged them to follow Shane Gandy's lead. What? And embrace their faith now while they are energetic and engaged. This life will hand you a lot of things and call it pleasure, but there is nothing that brings greater joy to a person's heart than serving the Lord. You may think at this point you're having fun, but those days will pass. Follow Shane Gandy's lead? Get liquored up for Jesus and go mudding at 3 o'clock in the morning? Too much. Too much. Jack writing in from Shreveport. Oh my effing God, words cannot express how much I despise Sean Hannity. I think it is perhaps just because I happen... I understood just. Jack says, I think it is perhaps just because I happen to be in the car when he's on the AM radio. He's nothing but a propagandist and a traitor. He's not a very smart man either when you get right down to it. Is he still using that Let Freedom Ring song for his opening? The one that is sung by the female vocalist and turns out to be a story about when she got revenge against her abusive daddy? Oh, wait, Dr. Freud? Abusive daddy? Things are falling into place rather quickly, aren't they? Jack says, as you talk about him being an enabler, I would extend that to him giving a nationwide excuse for hate and for abuse. You are exactly correct. That piece of effing garbage needs to be taken off the air. The kind of language he espouses really has to be stopped. The excuse of free speech is not good enough. It's not even close. This goddamn propaganda has got to stop. Free speech was never meant to mean what that piece of crap spews. Bob, I try not to cuss a lot in my emails or on Twitter, but the son of a bitch Hannity pisses me off. Don't hold back, Jack. Don't hold back. So we've got Hannity out of the way. My daddy hit me with a belt, and I turned out all right. Why don't you hit your youngin' with a belt? They'll probably be a multi-millionaire radio star if you do. See, it's them sissies that didn't get hit with a belt that don't understand the competitive nature of the free market. Right? Oh, it goes on and on and on, because it is, after all, Moran Monday. It is about 28 minutes past the hour, and I'm going to take another little break, and we will... Now, can't play any bumper music or anything, so we'll just go to Glockenspiel music temporarily and then come back, at which time, if you want to join in the conversation, I'm on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, or via email, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. I sense a pattern. Do you? This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. Yeah, so we're back in this somewhat abortive attempt to get a show out this evening. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Some stuff developing, and it's not good, bad stuff or good stuff. It's just stuff. Some stuff relating to our work here with the AIC Act, and some technical stuff going on. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to knock off at this point, and hopefully we'll have better luck tomorrow. I've got to try to work with Agnes to find out what's going on with the studio back in West Virginia, and John Fox is available to do a little tech work. And thanks everybody for being here this evening, and hopefully it'll work a little more smoothly tomorrow. I know it seems like it's always problems when I'm on the road. We're slowly getting them worked out. We just haven't entirely yet. So, again, thank you, everyone, and we'll have at it tomorrow. Y'all take care. I'm Bob Kincaid.